Blog Talk Radio.
Away we go. It is time once again for the Two Guys Soccer Cast. I'm Mike. He's Stead.
Hey, everybody.
Off the beautiful game. Once again, as always, we are brought to you by the fine folks at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Montgomery County, Maryland, and the DMV's premier venue for sports and live entertainment. So, Stead, how you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing well. Looking forward to the last couple weeks of the grind and get a nice little break in for a nice little family vacation time. So, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. It would be the penultimate show of the year for us. We'll be back on the air next week to kind of take a look at what happened, maybe do a little bit of a retrospective. But then we will be off for the holidays until the new year. So this is one of the last times I'm going to get to speak to you on the air in 2018. As a slight tear runs down my cheek. So, sir.
All
it
right.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Yes,
it was
absolutely.
The age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epic of belief. It was the epic of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair. We had everything before us. We had nothing before us. We were all going direct to heaven. We were all going direct the other way. Tis the tale of two cities. Tis the tale of two finals. What do you think of this weekend?
I thought that was one of the greatest MLS games I've ever seen. Just from the standpoint of the atmosphere, you know, we talked about this, but the atmosphere that was in that stadium was truly electric. And I felt myself really happy for the people down in Atlanta. Atlanta is a great sports town. And Atlanta, which is an area that has a very large measure of urban sprawl due to the location of the city. But with that, they have the opportunity to really appeal to a large group of supporters. And I was pleased with the coverage of the game from I believe it was Fox had this coverage of the game. Mm-hmm. And it was, I smiled. I mean, I was excited. And that just goes from the presentation of the sport as it being a weekend evening game, great atmosphere. I felt like the league hopefully took a step forward, and you heard about players who were being scouted by big teams in Europe. You saw the gritty nature of the Portland team and how the moves they've made. And you saw like Darlington Nagbe, who played for Portland and now is playing for Atlanta. And it just made me smile. And as an American and as a soccer fan, to see that type of spectacle, that stadium was packed. I mean, it was packed. And that's what you really hope to see. I wish I was there. I mean, I would love to have just been there to see that game. And to have that play out the way it did, I'm not even talking about the game just yet, but to have that end the way it did, and the way the city has embraced that team, and how just in their second year of existence, and also I was happy for Arthur Blank, who did a lot to bring that team to Atlanta, and after what they went through with that horrible, horrible, horrible Super Bowl defeat to the Patriots a few years ago. to see how excited he was for that team to win was really, really enjoyable to see.
So let's go over a few things. Of course, MLS Cup, the victors, Atlanta 2-0 over Portland. Largest single game crowd in MLS history, 73,019 people. Among them, my cousin and her family. Through 17 games, Atlanta MLS attendance record 901,000 people and 33 people. 17 games. It drew a pretty impressive 1.2 rating through Nielsen's, which makes it the most watched game MLS game in 20 years.
Wow.
To put this in perspective, up 71% over MLS Cup Finals last year.
Wow. That's great.
So
that's great.
People were watching.
Yep.
By the numbers, Joseph Martinez scores the opener in the 39th. Escobar with the clincher in the 54th. Martinez, 35 total goals through the season, 31 in the regular season, plus another 4 in the postseason. He's the reigning MVP. You saw all of the offense that was Atlanta on show. I thought, like you, Fox did a fantastic job of framing and broadcasting the game. The atmosphere was electric. You could hear the crowd constantly throughout the game. It sounded like a proper soccer final.
Yeah, it sounded like a cup final.
If this was your showcase game for MLS for the season, then it was a good showcase. If people only watched one game, it was one to watch.
Yep.
Maybe not the most competitive, but it was electric. It had all the good that is the beautiful game. The attacking play of Miguel Almiron and Joseph Martinez. Great defense.
From
Michael Parkhurst and Jeff Lorenkowitz. A couple of good saves on either side. I'm thinking especially of the header from Ebobite Brad Guzan.
Brad Guzan kept out.
Reflectively saved in the first half that would even the score.
Yep.
I thought Portland was in it for the first couple of minutes, but then slowly but steadily, much like an anaconda with its prey, Atlantis just kind of strangled the life out of them. And you could see their ability to maintain and play in that match slowly ebb away. It was Joseph Martinez's goal was all the display of what makes him an amazing player. It comes off of the, I believe it was a Parkhurst challenge. The ball goes right to him, goes right around the defense, right around the goalkeeper, in a position with pressure where many before him have failed. My eyes go to you, Fernando Torres, with that horrific miss on an open net.
He
rounded the goalkeeper and just slotted the ball into the back of the net to give Atlanta United a much-deserved 1-0 win, and that would be the winner.
Yeah, the way Martinez, too, how calm he was in front of the goal. And you see players in leagues that are, of course, not quite as competitive. The players don't have quite the skill. That could easily have gone poorly. And the way he hesitated and the way he just said, I got this. I'll take my time. I'm going to make the goalkeeper commit, and I'm going to put the ball right in the back of the goal. Nice even placement was could tell at that point that they took Portland's best shot. They got one that was probably, as you said, the game wasn't quite as compelling. It was kind of a based off of a poor clearance from Portland, but the finish was spot on, and it's what he's done all year. And, it's deserving, too, that he's the one that scored the winning goal. And also, he's the one that assisted the goal for them to go up 2-0 with a great flick on for the finish. So Yeah, they dominated that game, but they should have. And what often happens with teams who go on a little bit of a Cinderella run, eventually the pumpkin, you turn back into a pumpkin again. And I think that's pretty clear that that's what happened with Portland, where they gave a good shot, they gave it their best, but they had a lot of things go their way in their run to the MLS Cup final, and going into Atlanta with over 70,000 people, flags waving, music's blaring, the town itself is behind it. I mean, I believe you even had there's a world famous strip club in Atlanta that welcomed the team afterwards to come in and hang out for a little bit. So the way the city supported that team, it was a tall order for Portland. So hats off to them for having the run that they did. But you kind of figured that when they got to the final and you knew they weren't playing one of the upper echelon teams in the Western Conference, that this was Atlanta's to lose, and they proved it.
If not for a late season loss to Toronto FC.
Mm-hmm.
Are we talking about one of the best domestic teams ever?
Yes. I think so. I think so. In watching them play and in watching a lot of MLS games, especially recently, where the quality of play has improved. And what's been making me smile about MLS is how steady the improvement has been. We've talked about the early parts of the early games back in the 90s and how they looked like high school games and it was really sloppy play. How the coaching has improved, the talent has improved, that they're getting a lot more international players coming in. You're getting a lot of homegrown talent. The Atlanta team had their backbone was some solid American players who played in the midfield and defense, who really, really, grounded that team. And I would go as far as to say that this is definitely one of the best teams best club teams out of the United States. Absolutely.
They will go on to the CONCACAF Champions League.
Yeah.
We'll see how they fare. Next season will look a lot different. Mm-hmm. Tata Martino, off to be the manager of Mexico.
Yep.
Miguel Almiron, most likely headed to the Premier League. Be it Newcastle, be it West Ham, be it Arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph Martinez, his future yet to be decided.
Right.
They have a young guy in Ezequiel Barco.
Uh-huh.
Most expensive player in MLS history, 18 years old, Argentinian. Mm-hmm. Likely to step in for Almiron. There's going to be some changes. This team's going to look a lot different next year. And it will be interesting to see how they maintain. But nonetheless, congratulations to Arthur Blank. Congratulations to Carlos Bocanegra, who was key in putting that team together. Congratulations to MVP, man of the match, Miguel Almiron. Joseph Martinez, Miguel Almiron.
Yeah.
Jeff Arankiewicz winning his first championship. Michael Parkhurst, Brad Guzan bringing home MLS Cup in his first full season in MLS. And it is the Five Stripes who bring Atlanta their third professional championship. The Atlanta Chiefs win the inaugural NASL championship back in 68. But you had to go back a staggering 8,442 days back to 1995.
Yep.
When the Braves conquered the Cleveland Indians, bringing Atlanta their only professional championship in the Big Four. So they're going to be partying hard.
Yeah.
Hot Atlanta.
I want to throw a shout to Tata Martino, who has had his ups and downs in coaching. And I'm sure that going from, Barcelona to Argentina and then to come to an expansion MLS franchise had to be viewed as a real step back. But what he's done with that team in the 2 years he coached that team really shows that there is talent in MLS, and a good, strong coach can really, really bring some top quality performances out of these teams. And I think more coaches who may have had a little bit of a lack of success in some of the bigger leagues in Europe, as well as the leagues in Brazil and in Argentina, could look at coaching opportunities in the MLS to further, I think that further enhances the league and the development of the young players, which will actually in the end really help the United States national team, which is also good for us. So good on Atlanta for getting him to come. And the fact that he was able to deliver is actually a really, really positive sign.
All eyes on you now, David Moyes and Sam Allardyce.
Yeah. Come on. We'd love to have you.
There is a place here for you.
Yes.
And it was.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And it was Tata Martino who switched formations from the 4-3-3 to a 3-5-2 in the playoffs.
Mm. Yep.
That kind of fueled this run. They were as dominant through the playoffs as just about anybody.
Absolutely. Well, that thumping they put on Red Bulls was showed that the end of the season they did just a little bump in the road, but they had been the dominant team pretty much all year. I think Big Sam will like to come here too because the press won't be all up his butt like they are in England.
Yeah, and the long ball defensive tactics might work.
Might work.
I wouldn't be at all surprised if you see him over here. Yeah. So we'll put a big bow on the 2018 MLS season, a season that saw the likes of Zlatan and Wayne Rooney take over the league, an improbable run to the playoffs by DC United, dominance by New York Red Bulls and Atlanta United, some great play from young Americans, Tyler Adams, Will Trapp. I would say probably one of the most successful MLS seasons in the league's 20-plus year history. So
absolutely.
No complaints here. Looking forward, this was a great capper to a great season. Mm-hmm. And we will wait with bated breath as the league expands next year to welcome in Cincinnati.
Yes.
And we will wait to see what comes upon us in March when MLS returns.
I don't recall being this excited for an MLS season since I'd say the league started when I was in high school. Mainly because in this particular area, the Mid-Atlantic area where we have, you know, some new stadiums with DC, you know, and Philly Stadium's relatively new, and the new clubs that are coming in, you're having more and more. I'm happy that, you know, the David Beckham experiment, I think initially a lot of people said it didn't work, but now I'm thinking that no, it's still running its course, but I think it's working because we're getting players continuing to come and interested in the league, and they're not just interested in one team anymore. You're seeing them now go to teams that have yet to really make a splash with a large name in international football. And again, I'm going to credit Wayne Rooney's play at DC United. Players are going to look at, I can get a good run over there. I can go and I can still play the game I love and have fun. And I'm going to be supported. I'm going to be loved. And it's not the best league, of course, but it's a competitive league and it's a growing league. And you can be a part of that. Cause you know, David Beckham was a part of this. And I think you have to tip your cap to him.
So we move on.
Move on. Well, I know.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
After you, sir.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a couple of things I do want to touch on, and I think I'm going to take this into a little bit of a darker area. Of course, a good for me this week could easily be Chelsea's play against Manchester City. And the dominance on the field of N'Golo Kanté, the way he was able to really shut down the offense of Manchester City and score their first goal in a in a lapse of concentration by Leroy Sané to come in and put that a beautiful just kind of pass up in the corner to really solidify Chelsea after their recent slide where they dropped a couple of games, but the situation with Raheem Sterling. And the continued behavior by fans of these teams. And, you know, we had the recent incident with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, and then you have the fans that were extraordinarily boisterous towards Raheem Sterling during the corner kick. And I was watching the game, and when he went to go place the ball for the corner kick, and you could see there were four men, and I'm just surprised at the level of rage that they were really just spitting at this at Raheem Sterling. And then, of course, I was watching that going, I know this is going to turn into were they saying racial abuse towards Raheem Sterling? Did that occur? And, of course, not a lip reader, and it's very difficult to do through the television, but you could see that there was this isn't going to end well. This is going to turn into something. And sadly, it did. And the way Raheem Sterling handled it, I thought, has will probably change the way he's perceived amongst the English media, because since he came up with Liverpool, he really has been basically their number one villain when the English team doesn't play well. Mm-hmm. And you know, and even when this most recent World Cup, where I thought he played very well, he may not have gotten on the score sheet, but his play was still – I don't think England would have done nearly as well if he wasn't on the field. So, and now, you know, his Instagram post and how he actually cited the media and the media's coverage of black players versus the coverage of players who are not black has a part to play in this. He didn't turn around and just blame the fan. He didn't turn around and say, this fan is an awful human being. He said, because you are constantly painting us in a less than flattering light, even in similar stories, fuels this negative image of black players in the Premier League. And that was extraordinarily mature of him, but also he had direct examples to show, look, this is a story of two of my teammates, and this is a difference in the way you're portraying them. And then I saw the recap and the talk by Robbie Earle, who was basically fighting tears the entire time he was talking to Rebecca Lowe on the NBC Sports broadcast for the Premier League. And he feels, and I get it, he feels like he has failed Raheem Sterling and the other young players of color, because it's not just black players, it's the young players of color in English soccer. And as a player who was involved in the Kick It Out campaign and who thought that they had actually moved past this and then see it really rear its ugly head really lets you know, I'm not sure it's possible, because fans get so emotionally attached to their teams and they get so enraged that they literally lose their minds. This is so well documented. The fan who I'm not going to mention his name because it's been mentioned, but I don't want to do that. But he lost his job. So what does that say? It's no secret what happens if you get caught doing something like that. There's documentaries about how stadiums have changed their policing of fans. And so he claims that he didn't say anything racially motivated, but he also didn't give an excuse for his behavior. And even if you don't say anything racially motivated, to come with that type of hate towards an opposing team's player where you attack their person, I really find that surprising. I'd love to hear your take on this, because the whole thing just from being an experienced person in life and watched sports my whole life, you just from the broadcast you saw this is bad. This is going to turn into something. So I'd love to hear your take on this.
It's hard, and for this to go on in a sport that I love, it's tough, because you want to say, oh well, you know, it's a great game, but then you have incidents like this, and it goes on throughout Europe.
Yeah.
And to be honest, as bad as England is, mm-hmm. they're probably one of the better ones.
When absolutely.
You look at Russia, where the fans write letters to the ownership saying that they will no longer support the team signing players of African descent.
Right.
So the famous throwing of bananas at black players in Spain.
Yep.
Just how some of these players are treated internationally. You know, you even had the scandal a couple of years ago where the French national team reportedly had quotas on how many black players, how many white French players, and how many Algerian players, North African players.
Yeah, the North African French, yes. Mm-hmm.
They could have on the team. In fact, the funny thing was, you know what happens immediately after that story breaks? They have a team that's predominantly African, and they go on to win the World Cup.
And they win the World Cup, yes.
Mm-hmm. And the guys who abuse Raheem Sterling racially when he's playing for Chelsea are the same ones who are cheering him when he's playing for England.
Exactly.
By the way, when you look at the England lineup with the likes of Jesse Lingard, with the likes of Raheem Sterling, they have a Dele Alli,
Marcus Rashford, Chris Smalling, Kyle Walker.
You have a very, 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 very heavily influenced a team that is made very ethnically diverse.
Right.
I'll say.
Yeah, and a fair amount of players who are, you know, they have one English parent and one parent of some African descent through the Caribbean or through Africa as well. So the mix of cultures is growing and growing and growing in their sporting culture.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wonder if the treatment of Raheem Sterling is somehow tainted by the fact that he is not actually English. He's of Jamaican descent.
Jamaican, correct.
And this, well, it's okay to do this to him because he's not actually English. He's Jamaican.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because,
which, personally, though, I find that utterly idiotic. It's idiotic.
I do, too.
Because Jamaican people fall under the English crown. Even after independence, they still recognize the Queen of England. So, if anything, it's what bothers me about this, and what bothers me about this, especially in countries like France and England, is their colonial influence is still very, very, very strong in the countries where these players are coming from.
Players,
you know,
from
learn your history.
Yeah, there are players from French protectorates in CONCACAF.
Right.
They can't play for any other team other than France if they want to play in the World Cup.
You can play for Martinique or Guadeloupe, or you're playing for France. all you have. Yeah.
You know, Florent Malouda is a classic example.
Right. Thierry Henry, his parents are from Martinique and Guadeloupe. So.
Yeah. But then soccer has a very, very, very awkward relationship with diversity.
Absolutely.
Be it the opposing fans.
Mm-hmm.
Be it the home fans.
Yep.
We talk about songs that are sung in the stands.
Right.
That have ethnic and anti-Semitic connotations.
Right.
You know, the one sung at between Tottenham and Arsenal.
Yes.
You know, you had the controversy last year about the Man United song for Romelu Lukaku. Referring to a certain part of his anatomy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or even the Jisung Park song, which is still sung in stands at Old Trafford, talking about he eats dogs in his home country.
Right. Right.
It's very sometimes.
Yeah.
Now,
again,
we do not support that. And you know, when you abuse that with so many close CCTVs in Great Britain, and in English stadiums in general,
right?
You should know when this happens that you're going to get caught. Chelsea has a zero tolerance policy.
Right.
You're going to get banned.
Right.
You know, it's going to be a problem.
Right.
I hope we can again use this as a means to draw attention to that.
Yeah.
And to actually stamp it out this time.
Yeah. You know, the I'm probably a little pessimistic on this, as I think that even if they force teams to play games behind closed doors, I really don't think it will stop. And it won't stop until the perpetrators cannot get support from anyone, and that's including the people who are sitting next to them. And the one thing that the Kick It Out campaign was about was that if you see something, you need to say something. You cannot just sit idly by while somebody does something crazy and then later on come up and say, you know, I don't support that. Okay, that's no longer acceptable. And until fans actually police themselves, I don't think it's going to change. Now, this, of course, as I said, I really hope I'm wrong. I really, really do. I really do. But
I think when FIFA, UEFA, pound the ball, really start to take this seriously and actually seriously fine the clubs and punish them
right.
in a way that manner that matters,
right?
Then this
yes.
will end.
Yeah, yeah. You know? If you actually tell a team, like, you are out of Champions League now because of this.
Mm-hmm.
You are, you
or
cannot qualify. Win
is...
your league, we don't care. We're taking your fifth place team instead, or you only get three qualifiers. I think it'd be even worse because that would punish the whole FA. You only get three teams in now. You know,
yeah.
You're right. It's going to take something of that epic proportion for this to stop because the fine of 30,000 euros is laughable. It's absolutely laughable. So, you're right.
Six figures.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands and go
yeah.
up from there.
Yes. It needs to be equivalent to what I think what American teams and American leagues would do to a team that did not properly police those sorts of things. And, you know, I've heard this time and time again that a lot of these countries have, you know, they didn't have a civil rights movement in their country per se, but it's the world is too small now. These teams are too big now for someone to plead ignorance. That's no longer acceptable. So
yeah.
I'm glad we had a chance to talk about that. I just wanted to point that out, that I wanted to throw some positive vibes towards Raheem Sterling. Of course, he's not a player that I have supported because I've watched him run circles about teams that I support, but his talent is undeniable. And to say that he's, you know, Jamaican because he was born in Jamaica, even though he moved to England when he was two, and after the colonial history, he's as English as anybody else on that squad is and deserves the respect of everybody else. And they really should understand, whether they like it or not, Raheem Sterling's one of your top two players in your country. And you can
exactly.
say it's Raheem Sterling and Harry Kane. You can say it's Raheem Sterling and Kyle Walker. You could say it's Raheem Sterling and John Stones or Raheem Sterling and Jordan Pickford. It doesn't matter. Raheem Sterling is one of your two best players. You need to really embrace and love him. Absolutely.
So before we move on, we want to give a shout out, as always, to Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for sports and live entertainment. Thank them again, Jenny, Alan, Steve, Fatima, Danny, the whole crew down there for keeping us on the airwaves. We really do appreciate their support. That is going to be a great place this Sunday at 11 o'clock to come out and check out Manchester United versus Liverpool.
Yeah, that's the game of the week.
The game of the week right there. The Derby of England, Man
mm-hmm.
United and Liverpool. Something that started over a canal centuries ago, but has grown into the biggest game of the league season in
yep.
England.
Yeah. That will
but
always
be
England's Super Classico, you know, no matter
yes.
what.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And while we have the big rivalry, I don't know, it was a good weekend for rivalries this
yeah.
weekend.
Yep.
You had some big ones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Juve and Inter, the Derby d'Italia. Juve running out 1-0 winners, taking an 8-point lead over Napoli. The Ruhr Derby in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Dortmund 2, Schalke 1. Dortmund 7 up over Borussia Mönchengladbach in the Bundesliga, 9
mm-hmm.
up over Bayern.
Over Bayern, yep. Yeah, Dortmund's going
to
be tough.
To say,
real tough.
I say this to say, some of these leagues over in Italy, ceasing to be competitive.
Yes. Yes.
In Italy, Juve, 8 points up.
Mm-hmm.
Germany, Dortmund, 7. PSG had their game postponed against Montpellier due to the protests. That's another mm-hmm. ugly situation.
Absolutely.
But they have a 13-point lead.
Yeah.
And you brought up Manchester City losing to Chelsea, 2-0.
Mm-hmm.
So we now have 4 undefeated league teams.
Yes.
Liverpool, PSG, Dortmund, and Juventus.
Yes.
The only 4 undefeated teams in the top 5 leagues in Europe. So.
Yeah, the weekend was great. And, you know, of course, there was a lot of late game goals. There was some 94, some 96-minute goal score to give teams points and for teams to drop points. I was also wanted to point out, too, that Champions League was also getting really, really interesting. And shout-out to English teams. It looks like all 4 English teams are going to qualify for the knockout stages.
Yes, all 4 have. Tottenham's 1-1 draw against Barca, enough to see them through.
Yep.
Liverpool, 1-0
over Napoli.
Napoli,
mm-hmm.
enough to see them through. So all 4 English teams qualify. Man
mm-hmm.
City, the only ones that are through as group winners.
Right.
Presumably.
Yeah. Presumably,
it would
right.
take Manchester United still has a shot if they beat Valencia and somehow Juventus stubs their toe and loses to Young Boys.
Who haven't won yet in Champions League. But
yeah. We don't see that happening, but stranger things have.
Mm-hmm.
But they will be, all 4 English teams will be in the knockout rounds of
mm-hmm.
the competition. That is good for their coefficient. That is
mm-hmm.
good.
Yeah.
For England.
Yeah.
So most of the games that needed to, that mattered, happened today.
Mm-hmm.
All that's left really for tomorrow is Shakhtar Donetsk and Lyon. Shakhtar mm-hmm. hosts Lyon. Shakhtar in third place on 5 points in Group F. Lyon second on 7,
that's
all trailing
true.
Man City.
Mm-hmm.
This game will be played in the Ukraine. If Shakhtar wins, they go on to the knockout rounds. If Lyon wins, they go, and Shakhtar will drop into the round of 32 in the UEFA.
I wonder if Lyon's going to be playing that. Let's just try to get a draw game because, you know, just getting a point, we'll see them through. Game can either be a cracker or it can be a snoozer, depending.
Donbass Arena in the Ukraine in Donetsk, not an easy place to play.
No.
Now, I don't know if you saw this, speaking of weird competitions, UEFA announced a third tier cup competition.
Really?
Yes.
When did this happen?
Last week, after we got off the air.
Yeah, I just searched on my computer. I just wrote UEFA third, and the whole thing just went crazy. So clearly they're doing something here.
Yes. A new champions competition that will be for the 32 teams. It will run UEL2 is what it's being called right now. And it will be another European competition. Now, why would we like this? Well, that's going to be I would imagine that will be the teams that don't qualify from leagues for the Europa League. So we're looking at the 7th and 8th teams in the Premier League,
mm-hmm.
in La Liga, the Bundesliga in Italy, probably teams 3 and 4 in Scotland, an opportunity for some teams that don't get to play in Europe to possibly play in Europe.
Right.
My question is, what happens when a team like Manchester United ends up in this competition because they fail to qualify for Europe?
Exactly. And you're looking at any English team, too, is because how England has gone from a big four to a big six. And then with even with the big six, you're still going to have teams like Leicester and Everton who can play with the big six on any given day, as well as currently Bournemouth. And even, you know, our buddy Uncle Nuno's squad could go in there and really wreak a lot of havoc just because of the funds available to a team that would be in the, you know, the seventh or eighth place team in England versus the seventh and eighth place team in Italy, I'm sure is a much different story than the first and second place team in England versus the first and second place team in Italy. So, yeah, that was the one thing I was worried about, too, because what just instantly popped in my mind is the depth of these teams that are going to be competing in these leagues. They still have to compete in their domestic leagues. And if you're running in playing games, because you still have your cup draws, you still have your League Cup, you still have your your FA, you know, I mean, every country's football association has their own cup as well. So, and then having another competition, I mean, we saw what happened to just saw what happened to Burnley, who qualified for Europa League. They couldn't even get into the group stage, and they're struggling this year in the Premier League. And you got to wonder if some of these smaller clubs, can they handle a European season? Do you know what I mean? I don't know. That just made me think.
It's the tail again, that dichotomy between a team like Manchester United. Would they even take something like this seriously? Chelsea, Arsenal, if they were in it. Everton probably has the resources to legitimately do both.
Right.
But how would a Burnley react to playing in a third-tier European competition if they were in it? Do they have the resources? Do they even have the desire?
Right. Right. And the depth in their club. I mean, maybe it's an opportunity to play some of your young boys on a bigger stage. I mean, I could see that being a positive, but I don't know.
Thursday trips to the hinterlands of Kazakhstan?
Right, exactly. You're going to be going to Albania? You're going to Uzbekistan?
Yeah, don't exactly. Well, not Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan because of different circumstances. But yes, we know out to.
But you're going to Armenia?
Western Russia?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Eastern Russia? Yeah, like this could be a very problematic situation for some of these teams.
Yeah.
So
you're going to Estonia? Lithuania? I mean,
Interesting decision, and it will definitely be a competition that is played in some arenas with some conditions that certainly Premier League, Serie A, La Liga teams are not used to playing.
Right. Well, did you remember when Real Madrid they played a group game against the team that won the league in Cyprus?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it was such a huge deal because the team qualified for the group stage and they were making a little bit of noise. They were getting some draws. They were playing some gritty football. And I remember watching that game on a random Tuesday, and it was in standard definition. Like, they could not broadcast that game in high definition. And they showed the locker rooms. You know, you've been to my house. The locker room was about as big as my basement. And the players were changing on benches. And they had just kind of had their stuff on the floor. Like this is definitely this is going to be a different experience for a club that could easily drop in a table. Like, even in Spain, a club like Sevilla or Valencia could drop in the table and be easily in one of these competitions. And I am cautious and worried, but I'll be honest with you, I'm a little excited though. I kind of want to see what's going to happen. This is going to be kind of interesting.
that I'm skeptical. That is I'm skeptical.
Yeah.
My, if you will, bad for this week, it's actually going to be the other final, the Copa Libertadores.
Yeah.
Great game. Don't get me wrong. River Plate wins the Copa Libertadores. They take the second leg 3-1 over Boca Juniors, 5-3 on aggregate, 3-1 on the day in extra time. I mean, it was a phenomenal game played, but a phenomenal cup game played across the ocean.
Yeah.
At the Santiago Bernabeu. And let's talk about this in how it is. I'm not even sure that River Plate is going to keep the championship. Boca Juniors has lodged a complaint with the Court of Arbitration for Sport.
Mm-hmm.
The final was moved because on the 30th, Boca's bus was attacked. Their players were injured by broken glass.
Mm-hmm.
River Plate should never have been in the finals. They fielded an ineligible player in the round of 16 against Racing.
Right.
Marcelo Gallardo violated the touchline ban in the semis.
Mm-hmm.
All things that could get them knocked out of the tournament. After a whole hullabaloo about whether or not the game would be played on the day, they agreed not to. They were going to play it the next day in another stadium. Then CONMEBOL strips Argentina of the game. They start looking for other venues and decide to ship it entirely out of South America. Why is this my ugly for the week?
Well, this has been ugly from the beginning.
It's been ugly from the beginning because of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's ugly because we keep hearing rumors of leagues, UEFA, wanting to ship finals and games out of Europe.
Right.
And could the potential, the success, the packed stadium, the broadcast, everything, the fact that the Copa Libertadores final, and by the way, a home-and-home final should be home-and-home.
Right, exactly.
You know, it shouldn't be home and Spain.
Right.
But due to their fans' actions, reportedly, the game was played in Bernabeu, not El Monumental.
Mm-hmm.
But could this give UEFA finally the proof that they a concept that they need to send the Champions League final to, say, Miami?
Yeah.
The Rose Bowl?
New York City? Yeah.
And I'm conflicted about this. Because you can put 82,000 fans in FedEx and play a soccer game.
Right.
Were the Champions League final to come to Washington, D.C., would I go see it? Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course.
I wouldn't
really care how much those tickets were. I would figure out a way to go. Absolutely.
Should the Champions League final be played in Washington, D.C.?
Right.
No. It is the European Champions League final.
Correct.
Just like it is the CONMEBOL Copa Libertadores. These games need to be played, if nothing else, on the continent that the team and the fans are from.
Right. And where the governing body has jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I have to agree wholeheartedly. Because as our show is called Two Guys Soccer Podcast, we are fans. And so, of course, to deny fans an opportunity to watch their team play is what you're doing the farther you take it from where they live. And I'm sure it's difficult enough to get a Champions League final ticket, especially if you happen to live in England and the final is in Moscow. That can't be easy, but at least it's still on the same continent. And imagining having to say, okay, we're going to play a final. Let's say, remember when we had the final between Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund? And
yeah.
I believe that final was in Wales.
That final was in Cardiff.
Cardiff, yeah. Okay, so, okay, I was hoping my memory served me correctly. To say
I thought for a second it might have been at the Bernabeu, but my memory served me. It was in Millennium in Cardiff.
Right. So let's say that game takes place at the Rose Bowl. That's an extraordinary disservice. I would say that you're better off playing the Super Bowl in Munich than you are playing a Champions League final in the United States. And just as an example. And, you know, I didn't think of it from that perspective until you brought that up. But that's a very, very interesting note, because that is something one of these governing bodies can do. There are, you know, Barcelona recently said that they are not going to be playing any games in Miami. But that was floated. And
it seems like every 3 or 4 years you have a soccer governing body floating,
yep,
playing a game. Remember, I don't know if you recall the famous 39th game in the Premier League that they wanted to play over in the U.S.
Yes,
that
I do recall that.
Against. You know, you had that floated with La Liga,
mm-hmm,
and they have been quite adamant about bringing a game, a regular season game over here.
Right.
And a lot of this, I feel like, goes back to the NFL model, where they export games. If they can do it and get ratings, why can't we?
Right.
Now you have proof of concept that you can host a foreign final, have it be well attended, have it be profitable in a foreign country. What is to stop? And, you know, it is as easy to fly from England to LA or New York. It's actually a shorter flight from England to New York than it is from England to Moscow.
Moscow. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it would be well attended.
Right.
And it would be profitable.
Right.
But it would isolate fans. And I just don't, and I think you can go back, and this could be the day that we look in 20, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And realized that officially, club soccer sold out to the almighty dollar.
Right. And what would sicken me about that type of final is I have this pet peeve that some people agree with me, some people disagree with me. But just because I'm going to a sporting event doesn't mean I need to wear a jersey. And of course, I'm speaking as from my local football team, how the game is usually 40% the visiting team's fans. But that doesn't make me quite as frustrated, because at least they're supporting one of the teams that's playing in that particular stadium. And to know that a final would take place here between any European team, everybody who has a soccer jersey who's going to that game would wear that particular team's soccer jersey. So you would have a section of fans that support the teams that are playing, and then you would see a bunch of Chelsea, Arsenal, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, Juventus, Milan, Porto, Benfica, and I could go on and on and on of the players there, and they're just going to go, well, I'm here to support, you know, and yes, the pet peeve, it's probably not very well founded, but again, it's going to be attended by people who are there to be there and not there as fans of those teams that are playing. And that will be drastically exacerbated if that final were to take place outside of the governing body's area of jurisdiction. I mean, whenever one of the European teams comes and plays here for one of their preseason friendly games, I mean, it's just soccer fans get to go watch a game. And I love that. Great. Let's go watch a game there. Wear whatever jersey you want. It's not really a league game. But I think that's what it should be limited to. And if you are over here and one of your teams is playing in a Copa, or sorry, in a club final, and you have the means to get to that continent, then you should go there and watch it and be with those real fans. You'll have a better experience anyway.
You're talking to the wrong dude. You're talking to a guy who wore a Croatia jersey to a Barcelona New York Red Bulls match.
I know. My wife
is talking to a guy.
This is stupid. Stop being mad about that.
You're talking to a guy who wore Manchester United jersey to David Beckham's first game. Now, that had appropriate because he was a Man United player.
That's appropriate. Right.
But I did wear a Man United jersey to a Red Bulls Galaxy game. I've been known to do that. I've been known to change my jersey after games. So you're talking to the wrong person on this one.
And I'm the guy walking behind you going, they're not playing. Why are you wearing that? They're not playing.
Because I felt like it. I liked it. And I woke up this morning and I looked in my 50-gallon drum of jerseys and I felt Sheffield Wednesday and I put it on. And doggone it, yeah, I did. Say something.
Yep. Yep, that's my pet peeve. I'm sticking to it. I don't care. Not doing it.
I mean,
I got five Arsenal jerseys. I only wear them at Arsenal stuff.
You watched me throughout the World Cup. My favorite thing to do during international competitions is put on somebody's jersey and watch who talks to me.
Yeah, that's true. But at least you wore the jersey of the team that was playing that day.
That I do. That I do. I at least have jerseys for the teams that were playing.
That's true. That's true. Maybe if I beef up my own jersey collection, I may change my mind.
Yeah, well, eBay is your friend, my brother.
eBay is
your friend.
You got that right. You got that right.
All right, my man. We are up against it as we have about 4 minutes left in tonight's kerfuffle.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about Liverpool, Man United at Anfield. Man United run out. My ugly for the week was going to be Fulham conceding three in the first half.
That was
going
to be my ugly, too.
United 70% possession.
Mm-hmm.
Fulham has conceded 40 goals in 16 games this season.
Mm-hmm.
Claudio Ranieri has got to be looking at that and saying, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I think maybe he bit off more than he can chew on this one. Yeah, absolutely.
But they'll go up against Manchester United will go in and they'll look to end Liverpool's unbeaten run.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the game of the weekend as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
So as we exit this podcast toil, your parting shots for the evening.
I'm going to go quick. I just got there's one more game that I find interesting. That's going to be Wolves versus Bournemouth, a good mid-table game to see who's going to be trying to sneak into some of those late Europa League spots towards the end of the season. But I want to give a special shout out and some positive vibes towards Thierry Henry, who was given a sinking ship in Monaco. Monaco has adopted the model of develop young players and then sell whenever they become viable to other teams. And he has won two of last three in Ligue 1, but they are down in 18th struggling. This is a team that has, granted, they haven't been in the top league for very long, but they have recently won a league title. And I'm hoping that Henry doesn't get blamed for their demise if they do happen to go down this season, because he was not given much to work with. So, Henri, hopefully you can turn this around, brother. Good luck to you, because you are going to need it.
Yes. And as classy a player in person as you can imagine, I just think back to the MLS skit with Mike McGee from the Chicago Fire reenacting Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which perfectly cast Thierry Henri as the French maitre d' in the restaurant. And he was epic. If you have not seen it, go look it up. It is great.
I have seen it, but I'm having to look it up again. That was a while ago. I got to refresh that one. That one, you're right. That was great.
So, my man, as we leave, once again, thanks to producer Paul, who woke up this evening to make sure that we stayed on the ones and twos. Thank you again to Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, the DMV's premier venue for sports and live entertainment. Thank you to you, kind sir, for being the first guy in the Two Guys Soccer Cast. I'll give you top billing this evening.
Thank you very much.
Parting words as we exit.
Parting words this week are warm weather.
Crepuscular. Crepuscular. That is the word that we end on.
All right, brother.
Once again, it has been fun. We will be back next week. We did good this week. We will try, as always, to do better. For Stead, I am Mike. and this has been the Two Guys Soccer Cast. Thank you very much. You, the few, the proud, the ridiculous, who may or may not listen to us.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.